Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. Stone Payton, Lee Cantor here with you this afternoon. Lee, this is going to be a fantastic segment. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast Vice President and co-owner with the Excalibur Group, Miss Emily Walton. How are you, Emily?
I am wonderful. Thank you so much for having me.
Emily, can you talk a little bit about Excalibur? What are you doing for folks?
Sure, absolutely. So the Excalibur Group, we are in about our 11th year of operation. We're operating out of Washington, D.C. We originated as a legal staffing firm and have morphed, as most businesses have in that time period, into more of a program management and staff augmentation firm. We are in the district, which most companies in the district are supporting the federal government. We are among those, but we also have local work where we're working with the city. We have a national presence. We're in the industries of defense, IT, professional services, and legal. And so some program management, some staffing, kind of a mix of a consulting firm and a staffing agency.
What does program management mean?
So program management is a little bit different than staffing in the sense that you not only put a team in place to run a program, but you have leadership in place to manage that program as well, to work with the client to set goals, monitor and measure your output. So it's more extensive and more comprehensive than just getting the right people in the right seat. It also includes the substantive knowledge and leadership of whatever you're supporting. And so, for example, in defense, we have a lot of work in the Army. I have site leaders who are on bases that are managing the programs that we're staffing. So we have, you know, for example, a group doing accelerated capabilities in Fort Eustis, Virginia, and our leader will manage that project.
Now, when you get into a new area, like pivoting slightly from staffing to this consulting, how does that come about? Is it something where the client says, hey, we're already doing this, can you do this as well? And then you just kind of grow that out organically?
That's a good question. And it also is a good example of how that can happen. It definitely can. Client, there's been more kind of the programmatic leadership within a project. And then that's a client need. And of course, you're going to respond in like. But in our case, one of the reasons why we started approaching more of program management was just the industry shift. And so a lot of the things that, you know, young companies, small companies, and even though we're 11 years, we definitely still qualify for a small company. We have about 100 contractors, and I have about 10 internal staff that manage our workforce. We'll follow industry trends. So if we see, you know, that staffing is no longer something that is being utilized as much, we're going to place more emphasis on marketing ourselves and delivering solutions that are in high demand. And that is actually something that's happened in the past decade is, you know, a lot of times bigger projects or government agencies, law firms, et cetera, were looking for really high level surge. So they would need a lot of employees and then the project would end and they would contract down. And what they realized was that's a lot of money. and so now they're doing a lot of that more internally where you would just, hey, let's bring the substantive knowledge in to lead this project and we can get it done probably with fewer people than we did before. And so we've kind of followed industry trends and we're on the cusp of something really new and exciting, which I'm hoping to share today about kind of another industry trend that I've been kind of following along. And we're getting ready to launch into workforce development, which is a completely new area.
Yeah. Well, why don't we talk about that? What is workforce development?
Yeah, that sounds great. Okay. So one of the things I think in business, if you're a business owner, is that passion for entrepreneurship. And you can kind of get in a rut where you've done all of the substantive know-how and application that you can, and now you're running a business, which means you're stuck behind your computer doing spreadsheets and, you know, watching your cash flow, and you kind of miss that passion of the program delivery. And I think that's where I was at a couple of years ago. And I was just looking around DC and kind of investigating more of the political scene, specifically the economic scene. And I happened to attend a workforce investment council meeting, which is Congress mandates that all the states have workforce investment initiatives. And within those states and cities set up kind of their own model of what they would like to do. And with DC, they have a workforce investment council, which is comprised of business and agency leaders and, you know, Department of Employment people to talk really about like what's happening in the workforce now that can be improved upon. Are there, you know, are there crises in areas, which in DC there is a workforce crisis. And attending that meeting, I thought, this is really interesting. There's only one out of this group of, you know, 20 odd people. There's only one small business representative. And everything that they're talking about is work that I'm doing. I'm just not in that industry. And so it kind of clicked a light for me. And I went and investigated more. And I learned a lot about workforce. I'm definitely not an expert. But workforce development is basically the national and local push for increasing sustainable employment. So that might mean job retention, job entry access, eliminating employment discrimination, basically anything that adds to the likelihood of are un or underemployed finding themselves in sustainable employment. And that's done through things like employment services, placement, training, education, vocational rehab, things of that sort.
So there's some government programs that are out there that serve this group, and they need partners to help implement that or help get the word out that it exists.
Right. So under the workforces, you know, we've had probably since you know, the Great Depression era workforce programs, right? Under Roosevelt, there was New Deals and all kinds of sort of things that spurred this concept of government adding to the sustainability of our workforce. It hadn't been updated in a while. In 2014, under Obama's administration, we saw the Bipartisan Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act happen. Mm-hmm. This is landmark legislation. It's got the intent to basically strengthen and improve the public workforce system and help get Americans, including youth, those with significant barriers to employment, getting them into high quality jobs and careers. And then it also adds value or programs to support people that are hiring and retaining those workers as well. So they're, you know, federally funded programs within each state. The state then gets to implement the programs in different ways that they want. And then there's partnerships set up with nonprofits, agencies, and business, though the business piece is really where I want to focus on adding more value, because I don't think it's as representative as it could be.
So how is Excalibur kind of attacking this? How are you going to add value?
So as a private sector employee, specifically a small business, entering this arena for me, it means everything that entering a new market would mean. So and with the added fun of bridging the gap between public agencies and nonprofits.
Right. And that always goes really smooth.
We haven't done that.
Right. That always goes really smoothly, right? Whenever you get to.
It's so easy. So we're investing in market research like you would do at any, you know, vantage point of growth. We're getting to know potential partners, looking at national trends, really focused in on the local community. But more importantly, you know, we're making the choice to be part of the solution to un and underemployment. Mm-hmm. And most of our work is supporting federal contracts. And we are having to make that transition to say, okay, if our federal contracts are needing this type of employee, and our workforce deficits in our city have these type of labor skills, there's a gap. And how do we insert ourselves? So it's something that we're, you know, kind of getting ready to approach, investigating, pouring our resources in to figure out how to do that.
So when you're working on kind of this new type of initiative, and this seems like it has some level of complexity and some moving parts, how do you kind of define success and, you know that you're going to be high-fiving at the end of the day, at the end, you know, that you did it, you're doing it right, you're on the right track?
Right. Well, it definitely doesn't look quantifiable in dollars and cents. So gainfully employed members of our community with more than jobs, but actual sustainable careers is what success would look like for us. Right. Contributing to the efforts that are already in place to level the playing field for underserved communities. And then on a business end, to have the ability to compete and perform on contracts to create jobs that enhance their quality of life. So for our area specifically, it's finding jobs to place returning to work or job entry candidates into high growth industries. So for DC, that's construction. I mean, if you've been into DC lately, you will recognize that 5 years ago, driving into the city, there wasn't a crane in sight. And you now drive into
now
the city
cranes.
And there's no vista. Right? It's like the crane vista. So construction is really high in demand. IT, security, all of, you know, especially now all of our cybersecurity elements are actually, you know, usually hubbed here. They're happening out of this region. And so this is a very big area for us. Hospitality, those are areas that we want to focus on for building jobs. And part of success is actually it's the journey into that, right? So when I was speaking earlier about kind of sitting in that meeting and recognizing, hey, this is what I'm doing. I'm just in a different industry. What was happening is I could see that there was a need for a job developer, right? You have to, in workforce development, if you're in a public nonprofit program, you'll have what's called a job developer. It'll be somebody who goes into businesses and aligns themselves and figures out like, hey, what is it that you guys need? And how can we work together to make more openings in your industry or in your specific company that are going to align themselves with folks that we're putting through training and education now? And we already do that just in what we call business development, right? We're nurturing clients. We're figuring out like, what does this client need? And I'm providing them this already, but if I tweak it like this, I can actually, you know, add two more positions by telling them, you know, hey, if you're adding a knowledge manager, you're going to be able to streamline this. So it's the same work. It's just a different type of approach. So you need job preparedness. So there's training aspects. We have a great training program that is called Owl to the Fourth Power, which I can talk about in detail later if you'd like. But it's, you know, job placement. These are all things that our business is doing that we can say we've done it successfully before. We now just need to know, like you said, what does success look like for us? And frankly, when you're in a new kind of arena, you're going to be relying on your, you know, your team. And so for us, it's that new connection with, we're relying on our nonprofit and our training partners to prepare candidates. Then it will be our collective job to like help remove barriers for people like lack of transportation, no plan or resource set in place for emergency. And, you know, those are things that you think, hey, if this person has the training and we give them credit to get to work on the metro, they're going to be fine. That's usually not what, you know, throws a loop in an underserved community's participants, you know, life. What it is somebody misses daycare because they've had the flu for 3 days and all of a sudden you're going to be out of a job because you don't have any resources or backup plan for emergencies like childcare, hospital bills, et cetera. So those are barriers that we have to collectively look at as a group. There's gaps in our education system still, including not encouraging folks to go to vocational. Vocational training is oftentimes the entryway into additional education, but it'll at least give you a foot in the door where you can get your first job and start building your career. So, you know, we aim to be hiring people within the DC community, specifically in our Ward 7 and 8 that have gone through educational or vocational trainings and are motivated to work and work to be promoted. So we're excited and hopefully we'll be seeing in 6 to 12 months kind of our inputs into the workforce development arena, we'll see the results with, you know, able-bodied working people in sustainable careers.
Now, it sounds like your superpower is this ability to kind of connect all the dots for these disparate groups. You mentioned that one of the challenges is the candidates, some of the challenges that a candidate would have, or maybe like they lack the skills today to do the work that's needed today, as well as logistically, you know, getting from point A to point B in an, you know, efficient manner. Those things seem like kind of out of the scope of most firms like yours. And by expanding your offering into that area, I mean, how much stress does that put on your organization? Because I mean, that's
absolutely
you're putting a lot on your
super
plate.
Super out of scope, right? super out of scope. And, you know, I think as a business owner, you're the smartest when you recognize who actually is smarter at the thing that you need done, right? And so for us, it's all about building alliances at this point. So there's elements that we do really well. We're great trainers. And the reason why we're great trainers is because when we go to place contractors, we see who makes it or doesn't make it.
Right.
And tied right to that is figuring out, well, what are all the elements? What's the common thread with the element of people who have success in employment long term? That's like what you said, our strength is maybe connecting all the dots, but in that area, we can contribute that. Well, then what is it that we need? We need folks to actually implement the training or, you know, bring to the table programs that we can say, hey, you know, we'll take the legal industry, for example. We have a lot of people working for the Department of Justice. They're in paralegal or entry-level law openings. These are jobs that people can do with certificates that may take 12 to 18 months. That's doable. What we need is those partners that are going to bring that path for them to go through the education system, and we can't do it alone. And so this is kind of the beauty of this, is that it forces you to be collaborative, right? It forces us to not just rely on our competitive nature as business, but to look back and say, okay, we know that there's public funding, so we know that we're going to have to work with either a federal or a state agency on this. We know that the people working in the community are the nonprofit community, are the nonprofit leaders. So we have to figure out who's doing the best training and can we help implement new training modules or things of a sort that will align them better with the openings that we have that we can place them in. So it really is kind of that collaborative effort that I think we've been moving closer and closer to, but we're not there yet. I think, like I said, one of the missing elements is more business participation. And that's something that we hope to do, is set an example by, you know, especially as a small business, this is easier. I'm not going to say it's, you know, perfect, but it's easier for large businesses sometimes to put their foot in this arena because one, they can afford those resources of investment in the time that it takes to kind of ramp up to serve this community. But they're also, there's a misconception a lot of times with the public agencies and the nonprofits that this is where all the jobs are. And that's not always the case. Our small businesses are who are employing locally, right? Our small businesses are employing locally. We're buying locally. So it's really the small business community that needs to be enticed and incentivized to participate in programs like this.
Right. We're seeing this here in Atlanta. We did several segments on this about these vocational paths, the technology schools, vocational schools, technical schools, that I don't think that parents are encouraging their children to go down. They're kind of steamrolling some children into college as the only answer to their career. Mm-hmm. And there's a huge opportunity. And with lucrative careers, if they just choose a path that's probably more aligned with the skills of their children, and it's a shorter commitment of time to go through a lot of these programs to get kind of...
And it costs less money.
Right. It's like a win-win all the way around. And the parents are just kind of almost blinded by college as the only path to success. And there's other ways to skin the cat here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm hoping, like, for example, in DC, an entry crane operators, and I'm coming back to the cranes.
Right, because they're everywhere.
Construction is really hot and heavy right now. $90,000 is your salary, your starting salary,
right,
at crane entry operation. Come on. You know, I'm like, hey, we went into the wrong field completely. So that definitely is true. And I think, you know, the efforts, and I won't go in a political, you know, direction, but I will say that the efforts are, they need to be bipartisan, right? So in the bipartisan bill, under the Obama administration, the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act. That happened. It poured money into all sorts of vocational schools, veteran programs, rehab, even like right out of high school, or some of it is incumbent funding, right, where you're actually you're working with employers to get people that have gotten their first job. How do we keep them there? How do we, you know, how do we fund programs that train the managers to keep the career pathway moving? So there is a movement towards there. Under current situation, we're looking at a pretty significant cut. I think Department of Labor is looking at in their 18 budget a 21% cut, 40% for the workforce initiative stuff. There's a 40% cut that we're looking at. So it's really important that everybody recognize, like you said, there's not just one shoe that fits everything. This is it's going to take the community, it takes the business, it takes the nonprofits, the government to all recognize that if we really want to invigorate our economy, we have to find alternative ways to reach people that are under and unemployed.
Right. But I think to your point earlier about it's the small to mid-sized companies that are the boots on the ground that really are seeing where the needs are. And it's not, you know, somebody, you know, we're seeing it in market by market. Like you said, cranes are a good economic indicator of things happening in your city. Mm-hmm. When they go away, it usually means you're in a rough period. And when they're out in full force, it usually means that time's going to be good in those markets. But there's a lot of need out there for people with these skills. And you're right, that's an underserved market. And the people that can really work together, whether it be private, public, or both, and get the community involved, then you have the best chance of making a really impact in your community.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think so in DC, imagine there's TANF, which is the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families. There's, I think, 11,000 or so recipients in our city right now. And one of the programs that we're looking at, you know, maybe making space for 150 over an annual period to assist. So imagine if we were successful with 150, you know, job placements this year, with an average, let's say an average salary of 50,000, that may be a little high, but, you know, that's like $7.5 million that is revenue that goes back into the underserved community, which
right.
impacts the kids that are in those schools that need attention, the neighborhoods, the local economy. So small wins have huge impacts. Like you said, it is really the boots on the ground. It's the small businesses that are doing the hiring and then doing the buying in the local economy. So I think there is a real need for attention there.
Well, we kind of virtually met through the Alt MBA program, Seth Godin's Alt MBA program. Can you talk a little bit about why you chose to get involved with that group?
Yeah, so that I'm glad you brought that up. I as Lee's saying, we've both participated in this Alt MBA program. It's just this amazing, innovative way of looking at education. And I think, Lee, it was actually really instrumental for me to start putting the gas pedal on this program here, because what it really is training you to do is to think in a larger context of, you know, just whatever your mission is. So, you know, my mission as a business owner is to kind of keep the lights on, make sure that I have, you know, 100 some mouths to feed, that I'm doing that. I'm working with my business partner to make sure we have healthy revenue. You know, all of those things are my mission. I go to work every day. I'm, you know, in a zone. I'm getting this done. And the Alt MBA really extends. It's almost like it's an alternative MBA where you're talking about what are the impacts in the output that we do as individuals that have legs, that can create change, that are innovative. How can we think outside of the box? How can we make connections? And I think for me, on a personal level, the biggest nugget that I got out of that program was that I am not a silo, right? I can't operate by myself and be successful, even though I feel like, hey, I'm the smartest person in the room sometimes, and I have the answers to these programs, and I, you know, and it's just such a false impression of myself that I'm like, really, that helped me realize like how instrumental all elements of community we have, just not only in our personal missions and our personal businesses, but in general in community programs. And this is a good example of that, where it isn't just the small business isn't going to have the answer, but the big business isn't going to have the answer either, nor is the government, nor are the nonprofits, nor are the people in need, right? It's going to take everybody to be collaborative, be creative, and take risks. So, you know, my business partner always, he talks about a risk is, you know, it's calculating and the odds are in your favor. Otherwise, you're just gambling, right? And this is a risk for us as a business to kind of step out and do something that's a little bit non-traditional. But I think it's a good opportunity to model for other private sector companies. And we hope we can insert ourselves into the conversation happening in the public arena as well. And the Alt MBA program is a good platform for me as a business leader and a business owner to look at alternative ways of solving problems.
Right. And I think what I took away from it was really getting to the heart of your why as a business owner. Mm. Like, why are you here? Why are you doing what you're doing? And, you know, do you really, what kind of impact do you want to have in the world? You know, how do you want to make your kind of dent in the universe? And for me, what we do here at Business Radio X, we're trying to tell the stories of business that tend to be ignored by traditional media and that don't always get kind of the chance to be on a platform to tell about the good work that they're doing. And it's really been a gift for you to share your story, because it is a great example for other business people that you can get involved no matter what you're doing in your community in ways that maybe are not the norm. And that's the beauty to me of small business. We can take risks. We can kind of go out on a limb and we can try new things that maybe in a large organizations, nobody would be willing to risk political capital to venture into.
Right.
Because it's outside of the scope of what they do. But for us, all it takes is an individual, a leader, an owner to say, you know what, we're doing this. And I know it's a little outside the norm, but guess what? I think it's going to make a difference. And even if it explodes and doesn't work out, we're going to have a good story to tell at the end of the day, right? We took a good swing
at
things.
We'll have a good run.
Right? And
I think that's a really good point, yeah.
Good for you for doing that. And it's important. And you're role modeling really good behavior for other business owners and business people out there. So thank you for your efforts in this area. It's very important.
Absolutely. I'm a big advocate for social entrepreneurship, which to me, it's a concept you can create profit while doing good.
Right.
In fact, I always argue for creating profit. but there is alternative ways of doing work that, you know, can impact your community in powerful, meaningful ways for recovery for people and for equity.
Right. Well, so what's next for you guys? How do you want to see this kind of story unfold?
So we've just recently applied for funding to be a TANF job placement partner in DC. We're along with two leading nonprofits in our community. We hope to see, you know, hundreds of deserving people come through our doors, find successful employment, employment that has, again, fair wages, room for advancement, things that, like you spoke to earlier, kind of a match for skill sets, has professional development that assists in the next stages of career, et cetera. So implementing, you know, if we're awarded that TANF job program, what will happen for us is we're going to get an opportunity to implement a training program that we developed called AL4, which is it's AL to the fourth power. The training stands for occupied with listening, learning, leaping, and leading. Mm-hmm. And so what we've found from kind of like I talked about earlier, our successful contractors is really, those are the four elements. If you think about what allows somebody to, you know, take the step from, okay, now you've gotten the job that you've been trained and you've been, you know, primed for, how do you stay there and how do you make it into a career? And so we found like listening, quiet your mind, focusing on the requests and the needs and the explanations from your leader, your peers, or your clients is an essential element. And the Alt MBA is something that really helps me with this. So when you can practice empathy while listening, you're absorbing a quick understanding of what task or problem you're challenged with tackling, right?
Right.
Learning. So good listening leads to good questions. pathway to learning is exploration. So lots of questions. What does success look like? Like you're asking me, what does that look like for us? What does that look like for you if you're in a new position? Being occupied with leaping. Again, it's the conversation about risk, right? Just do it. Nothing beats action. Sometimes it takes guts, but results will follow. And then being occupied with leading. Leading does not mean managing. It means inspiring. So if you are leading, you're inspiring people. You can inspire your neighbor. You can inspire your children. You can inspire your colleagues at work. So those are the four elements that we're hoping to kind of embody in our trainings that we're going to be empowering folks to successful job placements. So we're excited. We're hoping that the job placement work that we're looking at getting with DC is awarded, and we will be up and running with, you know, quite a few new staff members at that point in time to really address the city's need and become a partner.
Good stuff. Well, if somebody wanted to learn more about Excalibur, it's a website for you.
Absolutely. www.theexcaliburgroup.com.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for being part of the show today.
Awesome. Thank you, Lee, for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor. Our guest this afternoon, Vice President and co-owner with the Excalibur Group, Miss Emily Walton, and everyone at the Business Radio X family, saying we'll see you in the fast lane.